Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast at the mid-season mark in the schedule. My name is Scott, joined, as always, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Scott, I'm doing great. UC's coming off a 37-21 win over Tulane, going 2-0 in the conference for the first time in feels like forever, and they've elevated themselves into the top 25, getting that crooked number next to their name. For the first time in what seems like longer. But more important news, we got Matt Opper back on the broadcast.
Yeah, it takes a 6-0 record and a ranking for me to come out of retirement or hiding, however you want to phrase that.
That is the definition of Fairweather fandom.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Let's go with that. Okay. It's not like I sat through the Sugar Bowl all the way to the end.
I think almost everyone sat through the Sugar Bowl to the end because they couldn't get up because they were so drunk, is what I've heard.
Yeah, that's probably accurate. Okay. But, you know, it was an angry drunk. It wasn't a fun drunk.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we all saw that outcome coming as soon as Brian Kelly left in the middle of that team dinner. I guess, Matt, I mean, turn it over to you. What are your thoughts on the games, you know, last Saturday?
Well, it was pretty much characteristic of what this team has become. I mean, they won with great defense. I know Tulane put 21 on the board, but a lot of that came from, you know, good field position from a couple of kickoff returns, and they capitalized on those. But for the most part, I mean, UC shut them down completely. They only had 266 yards total offense, which is right on the average for what the Bearcats are allowing this year. The offense was, you know, they absolutely dominated at the point of attack, dominated with a run game, didn't even really need Desmond Ridder to throw the ball that much. They really kept him under wraps in that regard. I mean, it was just, it's amazing what has happened to this team in a year, because a year ago, it took like a miracle for them to beat Tulane, and this was easy. And it's just kind of crazy how much this team has changed, how much better they are now than they were a year ago. And the crazy thing is, there was no guarantee in watching last year's team that this would be the result in the following year. Like, we expected them to be better. I think all of us were predicting a bowl bid, maybe 7 wins if we were feeling pretty frisky. And they're already 6-0, bowl guaranteed. And they have a real shot at taking home the East Division crown and maybe going to a group of five, you know, going to the New Year's Six Bowl. That is even in the realm of possibilities is amazing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we've been talking about it on the broadcast the last several weeks. It's surprising at how far ahead of schedule the team really is. Like, you know, to your point, coming into the season, we kind of thought this was going to be a year one situation where, you know, we should see progress across the board to a degree. They're going to be limited. They're still trying to get some of those freshmen and redshirt freshmen experience to build to a better 2019. But the fact that they were able to turn it around so quickly on the backs of all of those young players, I think there's something like 70% of the roster is like freshmen or redshirt freshmen or true sophomores, is really outstanding. And part of that could be the strength of the schedule is a lot weaker than we thought it was. UCLA is not nearly the team we thought they were. Miami, Ohio is still the bottom feeders that they've been for the last decade or so. You know, the front half of the schedule was very, very UC friendly. But the fact that they're dominating in a lot of these games, you know, they're really doing so comfortably. I think we've seen second and third stringers play in about half of the games so far this season, which is pretty remarkable. It just really speaks to the coaching staff's abilities to identify talent, put it on the field, and coach it up.
Yeah, and to your point about the schedule, I mean, of the teams they've played so far, the only one who is still objectively bad is UCLA, but like in terms of the advanced analytics, they're not, you know, they're not fans of any of the teams that UC's played with. The exception is UConn. Everybody hates UConn. UConn is terrible. They're really bad at football. I'm not saying they should drop football, but they're really not good at it. And all their, you know, back to the Big East fantasies, they might have an idea. So UConn's still terrible, but everybody else is like kind of moving up to mid-pack in terms of S&P Plus ratings, which I did not expect. I thought them all to be in that bottom 20 teams, in that bottom 30 teams for the entire year, but they're really not. Like UCLA, Miami, Tulane, they're all up in the 80s, which when we played them, I didn't think that was possible, but they're not good, but they're not as bad as we thought they were when we played them. I think it's just that this UC team is that damn good.
But their S&P, like, strength of schedule is still 125. That's not like it moved up that dramatically. So Ohio is still trash. And ESPN's rankings don't really like their schedule either. But the important part is that they actually beat everybody. And they've beat most of the teams really handily. Like, the UCLA score was a single-digit score. But they pretty much dominated that game. Especially the second half. And really, the Ohio game was the only game they really struggled in. Like, you could say, like, their effort against Tulane, like, offensively was really, like, hit and miss. Like, they had the monster quarter, which, like, they've shown they can put out in, like, really most of these games. And that was really enough to hold off a team that's, like, not really great.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, they just take care of business, which has been something that we haven't really been able to say about a UC team for quite a long time. Even if they get in a hole like they did in that Ohio game by just playing stupid for a quarter, you know, they were well on their way to digging their way out of that hole in the second quarter. It didn't show on the scoreboard because they didn't really get enough scoring opportunities because Ohio was so good at controlling the ball and controlling the clock and not giving them opportunities. But when they got their three drives in the third quarter, it was pretty much a wrap. And that's – the resiliency of this team is pretty amazing considering how downtrodden this team has been at the end of the Tuberville era. And, you know, we talked about the youth, and that's – youth is great because youth is stupid. They don't know how bad it was because, like, almost none of these guys were here, right? So these are all Fickell's guys at this point. So they don't, like, they can kind of just kind of look beyond that and not have it affect them. Whereas the rest of us fans, we're, you know, obsessing over all the things that could possibly go wrong because we saw everything go wrong for 4 years.
You know, what's most impressive to me, I think, is that this team has faced, up to this point, a variety of different offenses and defenses. Like, you know, they went from Ohio a couple weeks ago that spreads it out and throws the ball and gets you going wide. You have Tulane that runs the ball quite a bit. Still out of the shotgun, but they try to get both running backs and the quarterback involved in the running game. They've got Miami. I mean, that was in a damn monsoon. So, I mean, who knows what they would have actually done if it was favorable weather conditions, but I mean, they're facing a variety of offenses, defenses, yet the young players are adapting and overcoming all of those challenges. And I think that's what's most impressive to me so far this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, to that end, probably the best unit on this defense, which is the best group on the team, is probably the secondary, honestly. And these are all kids. With the exception of Gilbert, who's been around forever, we're talking first-year players across the board, and they have one of the 10 best secondaries in the country. And one of the big questions coming into the season was, you know, they have a decent front. Their defense should be good because they have a decent front, but the secondary is, I don't know. Like, everybody did the shrug emoji. And they've turned out to be phenomenal in terms of contesting throws, making life difficult for the quarterback. And that was the biggest issue I had with UC's defense last year. It was that, you know, they had all these, they went for speed over size at a lot of key positions, but they didn't play like they went for speed over size at a lot of key positions. They were very conservative. They would rather catch the offense than to dictate terms to the offense. And this year is a complete reversal of that. And if anything, that has changed my opinion of Marcus Freeman 100% in the other direction. I was still kind of on the fence about him as a defensive coordinator, but the group he's put together this year, it's something to watch.
Yeah, one of the things that we've really been talking about is just how confident they look defensively. It's something we haven't seen the last couple of years. Because it's like they know they can make a stop. And then, like, they know they can make a big play. Like, Ohio being, like, the shiny example. Ohio's offense is S&P top 20 offense. Who went up and down the field on them all game. And they made the huge play at the end to ice it. And even in the last game, they turned Tulane over on downs three different times. Which I think is, like, really impressive. And, like, held Tulane to, like, albeit their quarterbacks aren't great. And, like, McMillan wasn't that good. But still, like, 12 of 31. And, like, they shut that down and made them one-dimensional. And when it mattered, Tulane couldn't run the ball for a first down against him.
Yeah, and that, we knew coming into the season that the strength of this defense would be the defensive tackles. It's very similar to that 2012 team where you had Derek Wolfe and John Hughes in the middle, and you just knew, okay, so that's fine. Everything else, you know, is kind of a work in progress. We can figure that out, but that we can bank on. And having that solidity and that solid play at those two positions has opened up a world of possibilities for this defense. And, you know, Cortez Broughton has been dominant this year. He has been, I don't want to say he's been better than Ed Oliver, but he's been at about that level this year. And he's not facing, you know, the triple teams that Ed Oliver faces, but his production is just, it's astronomical. I mean, he's a defensive tackle. He already has 10 tackles for loss on the year. So he's on pace for 20-plus. That doesn't really happen for defensive tackles. That's just an amazing season that he's putting together. And at the perfect time, too, because, you know, he sees the NFL coming. And if he continues this for the rest of the year, I mean, he's got a great chance to be drafted very, very highly.
Oh, he's having, like, an otherworldly season. Like, something that, you know, we kind of thought he could show over his course of his UC career. But coming out this season on pace to have, like you said, like 20 tackles for loss. Something like 8 sacks out of a defensive tackle position, which is just insane. I mean, that's unbelievable. And I really honestly think goes to the hiring of Steve Stripling, bringing him back into the program. I think that was a huge pickup in the offseason that seemed to kind of go under the radar with like the Mike Mickens coming back and everything like that. But I mean, bringing Steve Stripling back would seem like to be huge for that defensive line.
Yeah, what I love about Strip is his willingness to invert, you know, what everybody expects of the defense and to just put guys in random spots. Like, Cortez has played a lot of strong side defensive end on pass downs, and there is not a tackle in the country who can really hold up to his bull rush. Like, he is just destroying tackles in this role. Everybody knows it's coming. Like, it's a very obvious tell, and nobody can stop it. Like, he is just killing people.
Yeah, I think there was one play, I don't remember if it was against Ohio or Alabama A&M or whatever, but at one point they had Copeland as a nose tackle. They were basically almost playing like a 3-4. Copeland as a nose tackle. They had Broughton as a defensive end, and he just obliterated the offensive tackle with ease. Like, that kind of flexibility and confidence that Stripling can throw out there is really impressive, and really a reason why they're doing so well this season overall.
Yeah, and one of the most encouraging aspects about an already strong unit is how they're bringing along the younger players. Like, in the first couple of games, it was just Broughton and Copeland at tackle almost exclusively. I don't think anybody else played a snap at those spots against UCLA. But as the season has gone on, they're willing to give, you know, the younger defensive tackles a little bit of run. Like, Marcus Brown has got run. Elijah Ponder, Curtis Brooks. All these guys are having experience playing defensive tackle in meaningful moments in games, and it's great for this year, but it also projects for next year, where you got to develop these guys even though you had these two studs. And his ability to kind of mix both of them has been really encouraging, not just for this year and how you're going to need your depth for the rest of the year, because it is a long season. You know, guys do get nicked up, especially playing those positions. So the more rest you can buy them, the better off you are. And it just allows, you know, Cortez to be even more dominant. Like, he dominated whole stretches of that Tulane game, but he didn't register a single, like, he did not register a single counting stat. No tackles, no tackles for loss, no sacks, but he was vaporizing dudes. It's just, he has been the most enjoyable part of this season on the defense for me.
Yeah, it's for me, I totally agree. I mean, I think just the ability to see a defensive tackle completely blow up his blocker along the defense or along the offensive line has just been such a pleasure to watch. Go ahead, Scott.
I think he's definitely been the first half defensive MVP, and it's like not really close. Like for what you guys said, like his statistical impact is there. Like he's fulfilling like a lot of the hype he had like coming into the program, and like as you just mentioned, Matt, like his overall impact on like what he does, it's like bending the line, like changing guys like blocking assignments to help other players get free and make big tackles is like something you can't understate. Cause, like that's been a huge missing element that they've had for the last couple of years, where if it was like scheme or like guys just not being ready for the spotlight, it like definitely shows like that this year is completely different. Like they have a top 20 defense on some stats, like a top 30 defense on others. It's like, I don't think anybody saw this coming, especially since like going back to like what, like the last like three Tuberville years, their defense was really below average.
Yeah. It's nice to have a coach that has a history of coaching defense and actually show it on the field for once. That's been very refreshing. I'm not bitter about Tuberville or anything.
No, you're not sounded at all.
No. So, I mean, we talked about the defense. The offense, though, has been very impressive as well. And I don't know who to give more credit to. Is it the offensive line? Is it Mike Boone? Is it Des Ritter? I mean, from your guys' perspective,
yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's a lot of everything. Like, go ahead.
It's not Mike Boone. Mike Boone doesn't get any of the credit.
Michael Warren. Mike Boone. Okay. let's just say in some kind of other dimension, Mike Boone trained Michael Warren to take over the crown after he left. And go.
I want you to go, Scott, because I have some thoughts.
I think them being able to develop Michael Warren as like the top back, or at least him like being able to take the mantle as the top back, it's like really just, I think it's transformed the offense. Because now they've committed to the run in pretty much every game because they've had a back who can take the every down load. Which, like, nothing against, like, Mike Boone, but, like, he never did that in his whole career. They always seem to split the situation. And, like, now that they've concentrated on giving the ball to one back, like, be it, like, their depth isn't that great with Doakes being out and the other backups being freshmen. He's been, like, a low-key All-American numbers. And, like, his ability to do it as a receiver, like, can't be understated as well because he was one of their top receivers in the Tulane game. Like, if he can, like, stay healthy, he's going to have, like, a monster season. And not just because he's getting, like, a ton of carries either. It's because he's taking advantage of all his carries. And he can hit the home run, which, like, a lot of the guys who get a ton of carries, like, don't consistently do. Except for, like, a Wisconsin's running back.
Yeah, Wisconsin running back has a giant advantage of running behind the largest offensive line on the planet. But yeah, I agree, Scott. I think Warren is definitely that X factor that UC hasn't had for a while. And to complement that, they have an offensive line that's busting open holes and you know, even if they don't even have to bust open holes, they're moving the pile 2 or 3 yards. Like, all of those 2 or 3 yarders that Warren gets are caused by that offensive line, giving him a little bit of a seam to squeeze through. My gut says that transitioning from Hayden Moore to Des Ridder is like the biggest change on this offense. I think it is a big change. It is. But it all starts with that offensive line. And last year's offensive line was hot garbage. Like, how many false starts did we see out of the center position? And all of a sudden you put Garrett Campbell there, and they have solidity along the offensive line for the first time. Like, I want to say it's Michael Warren. I want to say it's Des Ridder. It's obviously a combination of both, but for me, I think the most important key is the offensive line.
Yeah, real quick before Matt goes into his point. Like, Michael Warren lost 7 yards, like, total in the Tulane game. And his season total on, like, lost 3 yards running is 11 yards, which says a lot about him and, like, a ton about the offensive line's improvement. Like, they've only lost 143 yards rushing this season, and that counts sacks. Like, a lot of that has to do with, like, how well, like, Ridder has run. He had a really nice running game against Tulane. Like, the scheme is, like, seems a lot better for the talent. And, like, they molded the scheme to the talent instead of trying to force the talent into whatever they wanted to do, which seemed like a problem last year.
Okay, so I agree with the points about the offensive line and Mike Warren both being stepping up their games entirely. Like, the offensive line is held together with duct tape and spit with guys who have never played football before. And I'm only half joking.
We have a hockey player there.
Yeah, before this year, everybody but Garrett Campbell didn't play. So the fact that they can take these five guys and create a cohesive, competent, very good offensive line is kind of amazing. Michael Warren, I didn't expect this out of him. I didn't know he had this in him, but he's been outstanding. And if he didn't, the crazy thing about Mike Warren is, as good as he had been this year and as outstanding as his numbers are, he is fifth in the conference in rushing. That's how good the backs have been in this conference. Henderson down in Memphis is averaging, I think, 14 yards a carry. So as good as Mike Warren is and as great as he's been, it's going to be very difficult for him to make, you know, first-team all-conference, let alone, you know, project beyond, you know, to, like, All-American level. And, like, his numbers are crazy. Like, he is probably going to set the school record for rushing touchdowns in a season.
And, Cronkright on South Florida just ran for 300 yards.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, the backs in this conference are insane. But if we can go, you know, time travel back to the first Saturday of the season and the UCLA game, and the season changed with a decision. Hayden Moore did some Hayden Moore shit and fumbled the ball in a really stupid situation. And Luke Fickle's like, enough of this shit. Like, I don't even think he cared what Desmond Ridder could do. He was just not dealing with that again. So he goes to Des, and it's been his job ever since. And the way that he's played has been outstanding. Like, his progression from game one to game six, where in terms of, and this is just purely as a passer, it's amazing what he has been able to do, because you generally don't see this in redshirt freshman quarterbacks, especially coming from a state that is not renowned for producing high-level quarterbacks. Nothing against Kentucky. It's not really Kentucky's thing, right? But his decision-making is impeccable. His accuracy is amazing. He has already gotten to the point, like, in the first couple of games, he was exclusively dealing with the flats, right? That's all the routes he would throw would be in that area. He wouldn't push it vertical. He would stay away from the middle of the field, because for a young quarterback, the middle of the field is death, right? But already he's gotten to the point where he is using the entire field. He has whole field reads. He is manipulating safeties with ease. And he's still just a redshirt freshman quarterback. He hasn't played that much football. And he's already gotten to this point. And the most encouraging thing about this offense for me is they have not even begun to unlock his ability as a runner. They do not call designed runs for him very often. All of his big runs, those are opportunistic scrambles. If you go back and watch like the highlights of him from high school, he is just gliding away from guys with ease. And he can do the same thing at the college level. They just don't even, like, it's something that Den Brock is either not interested in using or just keeping in the back of his pocket for whenever he needs it. Because the way that he can run the ball, it really reminds me of Brad Smith from Missouri. He's not really that quick. He's not that sudden. But he covers so much ground that it's really tough for a defense to cope with it. And if you combine that with his already super advanced passing game, like, this offense can go to an even higher level because of Desmond Ridder.
Yeah, I think the accuracy, as you mentioned, is the number one thing that stands out. Because they seems like they just needed him to take that protect the ball, like, make some plays, like, just get the offense going down the field. Like, that, like, whatever they said during the Kentucky game about how they just want to get 4 yards, like, a first down, and manage the offense from there. It's like, that's what they started as. Then, like, against Alabama A&M, they started breaking it open. And, like, that's continued. They've gone deep, like, pretty much every game and made huge plays. I guess Tulane game, like, accepted. But, like, his ability is, like, really shining through. And, like, as a team, 66% completions is, like, such a giant step up from last year. 10%. And, like, little things like that just break your offense completely open. Since 2004, they've only had 1 year where they've, like, had a higher completion percentage. And do you guys know what year that was?
2016.
2013 with Brendan Kay.
Oh, okay. I thought Hayden Moore would have been the completion percentage king. go ahead, Scott.
That trivia was the end of my point.
No, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, it seems like in recent weeks Den Brock started to open up the offense a little more, and the ability to really thread the needle and show that arm strength. I mean, when he hit Khalil Lewis for that on that flag route on his second touchdown to Lewis, it was basically an inch away from fingertipping out of bounds by both DBs, and he was able to squeeze it in there and lay it right into Lewis's lap. An unbelievable accuracy with the arm strength, with the legs. I mean, you're right, Matt. If they can figure out a way to continue to lean into those strengths, I mean, the ceiling for the offense is going to be through the roof.
Yeah, and that's why I'm really curious to see what they're going to do after this bye week, because they got an opportunity to really, you know, get a good self-scout in. But they've also played two teams in Ohio and Tulane who have really interesting running games that I'm positive that they're going to start stealing some concepts from those teams in terms of, you know, Tulane killed UC. Like, I swear to God, a third of their yards came on one play where they pulled both backside tackles and guards and just kind of ran like a hand sweep to the running back. That murdered UC, and that's a great concept. And it's something that UC can steal and use to great effect against these teams coming up on the schedule. Like, there's a lot more room for growth for this offense than I think even we're aware of, because we don't even see these guys every day like the coaches do. The coaches are even more aware of what their capabilities are than we are. And they have to know, I mean, like, I just know that there's more that can be done. And I'm really curious to see how they're going to go about incorporating, you know, that aspect of Dez's game into the team as a whole.
Do you have any things that you like to see them improve with the offense? Because, like, one of the things we've been harping on is just, like, the consistency of some of the receivers. I know, like, the passing game has changed. But, like, outside of DeGora, who's had kind of a real breakout year, we haven't seen, like, any of the, like, major stats from any of the other receivers. Like, albeit Khalil Lewis is getting it going. Like, he has 3 touchdowns and, like, 230 yards now. But, and, like, that'd be, like, my one thing with the offense is we haven't really seen the receivers that consistently making big plays.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. I'd like to see more run from Jayshon Jackson just because he is so electric with the ball in his hands. And like, it's not even that I want to see him on down the field routes more, because that's, I mean, that's generally what he's doing. That's generally where he's getting the ball. But like, I would just get, you know, do those wide receiver tunnel screens on, like, as tag plays on the back of runs, where you just get the ball in his hands with one dude to beat and just kind of let him beat that guy. Because he is amazing with the ball in his hands, and I just want to see more of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see more of, like, I'd like to see more out of the running backs in the receiving game. I think their bread and butter is basically running Mike Warren up the middle. I mean, they're going to do that 15, 20, 25 times a game. I mean, that's just what they're going to do. But he's proven himself as a receiver. He's quick enough to kind of shake and wiggle a linebacker. I'd like to see more of what they can do with Mike to get Mike Warren out of the backfield. I mean, he's gonna get his couple of yards in the middle and break one every now and then. But I'd just like to see what they can do to getting him in on tunnel screens, on slip screens, on I don't know, just quick little stags out of the backfield or something like that. I don't know. He's the best player on the field, and I'd like to see them utilize him more as much as possible.
Yeah,
I mean, at that point, it's kind of just like nitpicking for me. I mean, the offense has been great in terms of a lot of different areas. Go ahead.
Well, they have shown flashes of all the different things that Mike Warren can do. And, like, one of my favorite looks for them is when they go empty. Like, they keep personnel the same, but they go empty with DeGuara and Warren as receivers.
Yep.
And, like, Mike Warren murders linebackers in coverage. Like, I would like to see a little bit of more of that. So instead of just showing the five wides and motioning, you know, Warren back into the backfield, I'd like to see him actually just go five wide, especially when they're going tempo. And that's another thing where they haven't really shown much in terms of pushing the pace, pushing the tempo. And it's going to be more difficult now with a newer center, but it's got to be said, Jakari Robinson was phenomenal against Tulane. Everybody was worried, and rightfully so, because Garrett Campbell has been, you know, the one positive performer for multiple years on otherwise pretty mediocre offensive lines. And losing him sucks. But Jakari Robinson was outstanding in that game. And, yeah, I really think, like, I think this offensive line is going to get better next year when they get more talented players into these roles. Like, nothing against these guys, but, you know, they've recruited the offensive line pretty well in the last couple of classes. And the guys who are behind them are, like, more talented or just as talented as the guys who are currently playing. So, like, the performance of this line has given me more, you know, positive feelings for the lines that are coming.
Yeah, I think everyone was really concerned with Robinson because, I mean, the first snap, he shotgunned it to Michael Warren when it should have gone to Ritter and ended up with a fumble against UConn. But yeah, from that pretty much that play on, he's been rather outstanding. And he wasn't a guy that came in to the program with with any kind of really real concerns. A lot of people close to the program have been saying that he's going to take over at center at some point down the road. He's just that talented, and he could have very well been that guy as an underclassman. I mean, it sounds like he's going to be that guy next year, and he could very well be that guy supplanting. I don't know what Campbell's going to do after this season. I don't know if he's going to get some kind of like medical leave or medical redshirt or something like that. But
I think he already took his medical redshirt and can't take another.
All right. Well, then, yeah, it sounds like he's probably more than likely done. But they've got a good center going forward for the next 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah, I mean, the situation is very similar to when Deshaun Bond took over from Dan Sprague, and that was what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago? A while ago. But, you know, Deshaun had a rough outing to start, and that was just rock solid the rest of his career.
Right. I mean, overall, guys, I mean, grades on the offense so far this season?
I'd give the offense, I'd give them a solid B plus so far. It's like there's areas where they could still improve. But like I think the main thing is just like their overall efficiency. It's like so much better. Like one of the things like we harped on a ton last year was the red zone. How like, so many of their drives would stall like around like the 30 or like at the latter half of the red zone. Like this season, 26 red zone opportunities, 23 scores, 21 touchdowns. Like the kicking game is probably still not good, but they haven't had to lean on it, so it hasn't like had a huge factor yet. They've only attempted 3 field goals, and 2 of them have been inside 30 yards. It's like just like cutting all the long field goals that it seemed like they stalled out and had to attempt last year, like turning those into touchdown drives. It's been a huge, huge difference, obviously, like with their offense. And their third down percentage right now, 45%, is really amazing. And get, just in terms of like where they like rank in the country, like they're one of the best third down teams in the entire country, top 30. And their defense gets off the field, top 20. It's like it's just really great to see like it, them being so huge on those downs.
Yeah, and those the stats that you mentioned are why this team is good. Because with modern football, like there is a wealth of statistical information that we have. The only stats that really matter are, do you get off the field on third downs or do you stay on the field, right, for your defense or your offense? And if you get in the red zone, do you score touchdowns or field goals? Touchdowns win, field goals don't. If you get off the field on third and stay on the field on offense and score touchdowns when you're down there and don't allow touchdowns, you're going to win a fuck ton of games. Pardon my French.
Yeah, I think all of those numbers are completely valid to grade them at like a B plus A minus. I mean, I don't know where this team would be if Hayden Moore was still a quarterback, but having Des Ridder as that quarterback and being able to see an offense that can stretch the field as much as they can grind out 3, 4, 5 yards on the ground whenever they feel like it, having that flexibility to do pretty much whatever they want, whenever they want to a defense and be successful at it. I mean, they're far and away better than what I thought they were going to be coming into the season. I definitely give them like a B plus A minus grade.
Yeah. I mean, for the offense it's definitely a B plus. For the defense, I would go an A.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I can't, there's not much the defense is really doing that seems to be a concern. They tend to be a little over-aggressive, and that over-aggression has tended to allow some running backs to slip out for 10, 15, 20-yard gains. Same thing for quarterbacks, but, I mean, I'd rather have an over-aggressive defense that piles up sacks and gets into the backfield and, you know, causes mayhem on opposing offenses and still has a few of those, you know, you know, holy shit moments, than one that just sits there passively in zone, which is what we had for 4 years under Tuberville.
Well, I think like of course some teams have used the like over aggression against them on defense, but I think like the major thing that stands out is like the in game adjustments have been there, and not to say that they haven't been trying, but it's like they actually show up on the field this season, where things just don't like roll and roll. Like you give up 300 yards a game on the ground, like it seemed they did the entirety of last season. It's like they figured out a way to shut down like Ohio's really good offense. Like they figured out how to like take away the run from Tulane and force them into third downs and fourth downs, and it's like those things like just stand out so much more. It's like I'd rather they be over aggressive and be able to dial it down than be under-aggressive and not be able to dial it up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I mean, if you're giving up 10 to 15 yards and kind of in allowing the running back or quarterback to slip out, you're making up for that in tackles for loss and sacks. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I think that is credit all on Freeman's behalf because, like, this is the same personnel grouping that he had last year. There really is no changeover. I mean, at a couple of spots, you got a different people in. But it's the same group, right? And the way that he has been able to get them to play aggressive all the time, start to finish, and then if it needs to be, to dial it back. Because, like, you can always tell a player to slow down a little bit, right? You can't tell somebody to just be more aggressive, right? That doesn't generally work. If it's not how you're going to play, if it's not how you're playing, you know, it's not something that you can just kind of turn on. So the way that he has completely changed the mentality of this defense, because last year this was a defense that caught people, right? This defense caught offenses. That was what they were, that was how they were set up. That's what they did. Now they take it to the offense and make the offense make the adjustment around them. And, you know, like, Ohio had a lot of success on the ground because they designed quite a, like, three or four different concepts that were extremely slow developing that were going to take advantage of the Bearcats' aggression, especially at the linebacker level. And, you know, they hit those plays, right? And then around mid-second quarter, those plays just disappeared in a swamp of black, right? And that's a great adjustment from Freeman to be able to say, hey, you know, slow down a little bit, pay a little bit more attention to gap discipline, to lane accountability. Don't let, you know, make sure you're paying attention to your run fits. And as soon as they kind of started minding those details, Ohio's running game just went away.
And like, with the way the offense was performing, it made Ohio feel like they had to score on every possession. That's just, like, a lot of pressure to put on your offense. Like, and, like, the transformation on defense, I mean, I'm just looking at the ESPN, like, a number, because that's easiest to find year to year. And last year, their defense was 106. Like, it was, like, it's, like, oh, unbelievable, like, how much it's turned. 106 to 18. Like a 100 spot difference on defense in 1 year. I think that just shows, like, the level of, like, talent they've brought in with the young guys and just, like, how they've developed the talent they had. It's like there aren't, like, a ton of guys who see, like, a new, like, more snaps. Like, the guys who from last year just seem like they're a lot more confident with what the team is doing. And it kind of just shows, like, where they were last year and the years, couple years before, and how they just needed to rebuild and get it going again.
Yeah, and this defense is only going to get, this entire team is only going to get better because they are so young. Like, this is as bad as we're going to be for a couple of years, right? Let that sink in. Barring some catastrophic, like, injuries, coaching turnover, like a mass riot in the locker room. Barring something like that, this team's only going to get better. Like, this is as bad as they're going to be for the next 3 or 4 years. And at the rate the staff is recruiting, like, they can carry that on for quite a while.
Yeah, I agree, like, 100%. Just, like, it's like that's one of the things where you just hope, like, the sustainability is there every year with your coaching staff, which, like, the better they do, it's, like, the less likely that seems, at least for some of the coordinators and other coaches. So I don't know if Fickell will leave, but, like, Marcus Freeman, you think, is going to start being, like, an interesting name for some of these bigger-name programs that fire their coordinators.
Yeah, Freeman's definitely going to be a hot coordinator name going forward. Like, because what he's done with his defense has been outstanding. And this was a hire that we were all kind of on the fence about. Yeah, because generally, when you hire the guy for recruiting and make him your coordinator, it doesn't go so well. You know, historically speaking, this just generally doesn't work. And, you know, Marcus Freeman can recruit. Turns out he can also develop and, you know, scheme a defense. Well, that's another feather in his cap.
Yeah, plus he was just so inexperienced, right? I mean, what his experience before this, was he even a coordinator? I can't even remember looking it up.
No, he was Ohio State's linebackers coach.
Right, exactly. Going from, like, a linebacker coach to a defensive coordinator is a completely different world. And yeah, he's definitely shown that he's been able to adapt and succeed at it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. His future is bright. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, and they're getting to the point now where the scheme is set. They know exactly what they want to do, and now they can go recruit to that, right? And Malik Van's kind of a perfect example. Like, he's a defensive end now, and he's playing quite a bit for a freshman on the defensive line. He still really doesn't – like, when you watch him, he really doesn't know what he's doing, but he's so talented that he can go make plays anyways. And, like, I think his future is going to be in that Marquise Copeland role as, like, a rush defensive tackle. Because he's already 270. He's not going to get smaller. And that kind of – the ability of these guys to kind of adapt to their new positions and find a role and know exactly what they're going to do and then go recruit to what the spot is. Like, they just got a linebacker out of Columbus who is – a picture-perfect scheme for what they want in their kind of hybrid sniper outside linebacker position. And when you know what you want, when you know what your scheme requires, and then you can go find it, that's when you can really start, you know, cycling through guys and just having a very high level of production.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said. I don't really have anything else to add to that.
Yeah, I don't either. I think that was pretty well said. But so that's looking at the first half. Let's turn our attention to the second half. Like, do you think that the Bearcats can run the gauntlet undefeated? So let's aim big.
Yeah. I mean, they can. I don't think they will. I think they can.
It's in the realm of possibilities. It is not something that I would declare likely. Because, when we broke down the schedule when it first came out, we all said, all right, this is where you have to make your bowl is in the first half of the year. Job done. And we didn't expect to have, okay, now go win the conference as part of that discussion. But they're kind of there. It's going to take a lot, especially going to Central Florida. Like, that last four games, that's a bear. Except for East Carolina, that'll be fine. But Navy, South Florida, at Central Florida, that is a tough run.
Yeah. I mean, I think this, not this week, next weekend's game against Temple is all of a sudden scaring the bejesus out of me with how well Temple's gotten their shit together in the last few weeks. Not exactly a litmus test for what they for playing Central Florida because it's, you know, it's two very different teams, but. I mean, Temple's going to be a big challenge defensively. It's going to be the first big challenge, really, this team has faced all season. I mean, Tulane has a pretty solid defensive line, but Temple is just a whole nother level of good defense. And they have a decent offense this season for the first time. It seems like forever, and they've gotten better in the last couple of weeks. I don't see them beating Central Florida, but South Florida really doesn't scare me. I mean, Scott, you and I have been talking about them all season. It seems like they themselves have been holding themselves back. Like they get UC at home. Or I'm sorry, UC gets Central South Florida at home. That could very well be an evening game. It could be, you know, nighttime at the Nipper. UC could very well win that game by fairly comfortably, a touchdown or so, depending on how things go the next couple of weeks. But Central Florida definitely scares the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, like, the thing about South Florida is, like, none of the projections really like them at all. Like, I know you, like, win games on the field without the projections. Like, they're still only projected to be, like, a 9-win team. Because, like, the back half of their schedule is really tough as well. Like, this Temple game does worry me, like, a little bit. Just because they haven't beaten Temple, like, the last few years. It's, like, one of those things where, like, they have to do it. Like, and they have to go win on the road in, like, these conference games, which they haven't seemed to do in, like, the last, like, 5 years.
Yeah, and, like, this Temple game is going to really tell us a lot about how much this quick start was a result of, you know, some favorable scheduling, and how much of it was a result of this team, like, legitimately turning the corner and being quite good. Yeah, and it doesn't really help that Temple decided to flick the October switch, where all of a sudden they just decided, oh, we're going to be good now. Like, that was fun. We lost to Buffalo, but now we're going to be good. And they just flip that switch every October, and they're simple again. I'm worried about Armstead. I'm not worried about their quarterback. I have not been that impressed with anything he's done, to be honest. He's not a guy that you really have to worry that much about in terms of what he does as a threat. Like, he's a decent passer. He's an okay runner. Their offensive line is pretty good. You know, it's not really the best. I think Armstead really makes the offensive line look better than it is. But that defense is the same typical defense. It's super complex. They have so many different concepts. You know, as always, they have nothing but seniors and juniors starting, so it's guys who have played forever, and they have played in this scheme forever. It really can throw a lot of roadblocks at a young quarterback. So how Dez reacts to this defense is going to be interesting to watch.
And I think the schedule obviously set up favorably for this game for UC. Like, they do have to go to the road, but Temple, like, has to play Navy. So you're catching a team coming off after the Navy game. It's like just about like as ideal a time as you can catch a team in conference play. Unless like they play UCF first. But because you guys mentioned, Temple is really good, at least defensively. And it's going to be an interesting challenge that I'm sure we'll break down more next week. But do any of the other teams like on the schedule outside of Central Florida like give you worry, or do you think like this team can like shut down some of these teams, like three at home, three on the road? A couple like interesting road games before Central Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say Navy, but Navy is just so off this season that they just don't really concern me. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Navy's interesting. They had that big win against Memphis where it was like one of the most improbable, statistically, it was one of the most improbable wins of the season. I think Memphis's win expectancy postgame was something like 98%, and they lost. So that's not really, you know, you can't, that's not a plan. That just happened. And since then, Navy has just been, their offense is their offense. It's very difficult to play against. There's really no prepping for it. There's nothing like it. But their defense is even worse than usual. And they're not known for having good defenses. So, like, they're going to have opportunities. SMU is I didn't think they would need a rebuilding year post-Morris leaving for Arkansas, but they are in the middle of a rebuilding year. So there's really, I mean, it's that three-game stretch of the triple option of Navy, which can spring an upset because it's just bloody difficult to play against South Florida and at Central. I mean, that's really where the season is going to be made.
The only thing that really worries me about like SMU is that it's like kind of like a trap game almost, because that's your easiest game before the end of the season when you play East Carolina, which should be the easiest game. It's like the one game where it's like you don't really like have to worry about just like who you see on the schedule. And like, these are college kids, and like we see it with every single team in the country except for like Alabama. It's like the games that like you're supposed to just show up and like roll are kind of like the toughest ones to win sometimes. Especially in conference.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, one of those trap kind of not coming out as strong as it could kind of games. Like, it almost kind of like a replication of what they did against Ohio in the first half. Like, one of the games where they're kind of asleep at the wheel, and is it going to cost them? Are they going to recover like they did against Ohio? I mean, what is that going to be something that we see throughout the season against, like, one, like against SMU or East Carolina, for example, or God forbid, like Temple or Central Florida? Like, that's a good point to think about, you know, throughout the season. SMU could be that game, even like a Navy maybe, or even like a South Florida. I don't know.
Yeah, but defense travels, right? So against Connecticut, and like I know UConn's terrible, but their offense is pretty good, right? And they came out with a perfect script to take advantage of all the things that UC's defense does very well. And they took that perfect script, executed it to perfection, got a touchdown, and then they didn't score again, right? Because the defense completely shut them down from that point. Like, it was a total domination. And like, that's why I'm not quite as worried about that trip to SMU or, you know, the trip to Temple, because the defense will travel. The offense is going to be the litmus test. And if they are able to really grind it out and run the ball against Temple, I mean, that gives me a lot of confidence for the rest of the year. Like, it's going to take a Herculean effort for them to beat Central Florida, but like, it's not, I'm not at the point where I think that is a literal impossibility for this team. It's going to take a lot, and you're going to have to get some lucky bounces, but they can beat Central Florida. They probably will not, but it's something that can happen. And that's just where they are at this point because of what the defense has done this year and how good they have been on that side of the ball. That gives you so much margin for error.
Yeah, and like, that game was like the beginning of UCF's gauntlet at the end of the season. Like, if they want to win the division, like, that was the tail end of UC's. So like, it's like gigantic for like those implications, because like, Central Florida, their eyes like are on the playoff. Like, obviously they have some games to win first. Like, at Memphis this weekend is interesting. Even though they should blow Memphis out, I think. But like, they have like lofty goals, and like, UC could be undefeated or have one loss, where that game is enough to like get them in the championship discussion. So I think they could, like, if everybody stays healthy, I think that could be a really interesting game.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, I mean, I kind of have them at like, I don't know, 11-1, 10-2. I don't see them beating Central Florida. I mean, like we talked about, they can. They still have the ability to. But I still have them as like 11-1, 10-2 to close out the year before the bowl, or, you know, hell, I don't know. Maybe they go into the conference championship, which is far and away better than what I could have possibly expected this season, so I'll take all of that.
Yeah, and props to the AAC schedulers, because the troika of UC, Central Florida, and South Florida, they all play each other in like the last 3 weeks of the season. Like, they nailed that. They weren't expecting the East to be the marquee division this year, but they nailed that. They really got lucky.
And just the way the schedule, like, it falls out, like, Central South Florida goes to Cincinnati, Central Florida goes to South Florida, UC goes to UCF. Like, just like a nice little blend there. Like, everybody has a tough road game.
Yeah, and I just looked at Central's last four. Temple, Navy, UC, South Florida. Yeah.
Well done.
That's
well
done. That is pretty tough.
Of course, those three of those at home, like, where like they just like seem like unstoppable.
Okay, so not as tough.
But let's look at the league like, as a whole. Like, three teams ranked in the East, which I don't think anybody saw coming. So I don't think that's ever happened before, where the East has been the division that's had the ranked teams. It's like always the West seems to be the strongest, but there's no ranked team in the West. Like, do you think the East is just by far the best division, or do you think that's going to even out once we hit, like, the teeth of conference play?
Well, in the East, there is a penthouse and a basement. There is nothing in between. I mean, Temple is in between. So you have a penthouse, a temple, and then a basement. The West is more spread out. Anybody in the West can beat anybody. Memphis is amazing on offense and amazingly bad on defense, which puts them in any game, but also allows them to lose every game. And a lot of the teams in the West are built similarly to Memphis. And like, I thought Houston would be the team that would pick up the slack this year. Like, I didn't really think Memphis would be as good as everyone was projecting in the preseason. But even Houston's kind of faltered quite a bit. And their defense is – they have the best defensive player in the country, but their defense is not that good.
I do think their loss to Texas Tech, like, looks like a little like, oh, they lost to Texas Tech. I think that looks like a little better, like, in hindsight, since Texas Tech looks solid. But, yeah.
Yeah, Texas Tech actually sort of has a defense this year, it turns out. Yeah, so it seems like it's going to be Houston out of the West still. Like, I agree. I thought it was going to be Memphis taking the West and the conference overall, but, man, that defense is just so bad. So bad.
Yeah, Memphis, like, another team that, like, can't win on the road. Like, both of their losses. Like, Navy, I guess, was in the rain. So, like, you have, like, that, like, mini excuse. But then they just, like, got blown out by Tulane. And then they have, like, games they have to go to, I guess, SMU and East Carolina. Okay. Maybe they will be, like, in contention. But they have to win. Because if they lose this game against Central Florida, like, they're done. There's no way they're going to win the division with three losses.
Yeah, and, like, that Tulane loss is so weird for so many reasons. I mean, like, Tulane's a difficult place to play, not because the atmosphere is really intense and it's tough to cope with and all that. No, Tulane's a difficult place to play because it's just a weird place to go. Like the atmosphere is kind of sleepy, especially for a night game. The crowd is never really that into it. And, like, the way that they lost that game was disconcerting because it's not like they just had a few lucky plays that went Tulane's way and then, you know, they made a couple late scores and won that way going away. No, they got dominated at the point of attack the entire game. That's not really a positive sign going forward because Tulane is okay at best on defense and they just dominated them at the point of attack. And that's really difficult to come back from. Because Memphis is not built to be an efficient offense. They're explosive to the detriment of everything else. Like, they are going for minus 5 or 85. There's nothing in between.
Yeah, look, they did give Central Florida a couple of really tough games last season. Like, as you said, like, 14th most... They're the most explosive offense in the nation, like for Memphis, the 14th most efficient. And I think their defense is, like, really, really trash. Opponents' scoring drives per trip for Memphis is 5.26, which is 113. But on the other side, their slack offense is 5.77, which is number 10. Like, there's going to be a lot of points scored in that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be pointsy, for sure.
Yeah, I think, really, that game's going to tell us a lot more about Central Florida than it will Memphis. Memphis, I mean, I'm kind of in your guys' boat. I mean, they're basically, they're out. Their season is done. I mean, their goals, whatever they had set, they're over. If Central Florida can come out of that game allowing something like, I don't know, 28 points to Memphis and win by 20. I mean, they're far and away better than even like they probably were last season, just how good Memphis was. I mean, offensively. Like, if they can hold a Memphis offense to only like 3 or 4 touchdowns, that just shows you how good UCF is on both sides of the ball.
Granted, like, the biggest thing against UCF is, like, their strength of schedule has been worse than UC's. Like, theirs is 124, which, like, I guess sucks for them. They had a good game canceled. But still, like, they haven't played anybody. But their numbers are just really good. And, like, this is kind of, like, just, like, the best team that they'll play. I guess, like, South Florida's a little higher on the S&P. Like, their two, like, real toughest tests are on the road. Just by the computer, like, projections. So, but, in, like, they're now in, like, the end of the season. So it's going to be kind of hard to get a real, like, gauge on them, in a sense, outside of this game. Still be massive favorites until they play UC.
Yeah, absolutely. They're probably going to be pretty good favorites when they play UC as well.
Projected margin of 13.3. Let's be precise. So yeah, like UCF is just you can get at them, but you have to win first down, right? That is the key against playing the Knights, right? Because if you can get them off schedule, you at least have a chance to get off the field. But if they get 3, 4, 5 yards first down, it's a wrap. Because if they get one first down, then they'll probably get two, and then they'll slam the pace, and then you're going to give up a 45-yard whatever. Mackenzie Milton scramble. Deep pass to Trey Nixon. Whatever. Something bad will happen by the fifth play.
But Central Florida's third down success rate, well, third and long is 47%, which is third best. Third and medium is 67%, which is number four. And third and short is 41. Rank 41. To your point, you just have to get them off the field. And nobody can do it. It's Mackenzie Milton is really amazing. And their offense is just so hard to stop. Because then they have 1,000 running backs who average 6 yards a carry, just to pile on. Oh, and Mackenzie Milton is running, running for 6 yards a carry as well. And that's 5 touchdowns.
They're a tough out, man.
Yeah,
they are tough.
Yeah. But to your point, to Chris's point, it's they're gonna lose. It's gonna be a game. Like this, where they just get in a shootout. We actually see what their defense is all about. Because I don't think you can take much from beating UConn or beating Pittsburgh.
And that's where and this is a roundabout way to come to this point. But one thing I think Fickell has gotten enough credit for from UC fans this year is his willingness to just stick the knife in, right?
Yeah.
If he feels a team is on the ropes, if he feels the game is about to tip in UC's favor, and they got a 4th-and-3 at the 35, he is going for it. He smells blood and he goes for it. And that's the kind of attitude you have to have. And that's the only way you're going to beat a team like UCF, is if you feel those opportunities come and you take advantage of them. You don't play scared. You play to the moment and you go for it. And if it doesn't work, guess what? You're probably going to lose anyways. But the only way you can win is by making decisions like that.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. That's something I wanted to mention earlier, and I forgot. They've gone for it 11 times on 4th down this season. 7 of 11. And even when they don't work out, they went for it against Tulane at midfield, and it didn't work out. The fact that they're doing it, so consistently, every 4th and short, pretty much, if it's in, that go-for-it range, they're going for it. Which, is something, been complaining about for, ever. And, they do it. They go for it. And, that confidence just, radiates off your team. It's the smart move, math-wise, but not everybody does it. And, their defense has been great getting off the field on 4th down as well. So, I really just love that part of their game. It's they just play to their strengths, and their strength is having the offense on the field.
Yeah, and this has been how they've been playing going back to the UCLA game, where it was late in the fourth quarter. They went for it. Everybody on the broadcast is like, what the fuck are you doing? And, they went for it. They won the game. The Mike Warren touchdown was on 4th down. Everyone was saying, kick the damn ball. No, he decided, we're either going to win the game on this play or we're going to give them a chance to win the game on this play. That's it. And they went for it. They got it. And that really has kind of typified what this team has been this year.
Yeah, I just really hope it's not a situation where they get better special teams and they stop doing this. So I hope they stay this aggressive throughout his tenure.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, I think in Fickell's mind, if he has the opportunity to move the chains and have a better opportunity of getting 7 instead of 3, I think he's going to do that 100% of the time. I don't think that's going to change.
Yeah, and, like, you can really feel, like, this is an Urban Meyer tactic 100%. Like, you can feel the Urban Meyer kind of rubbing off on him in terms of this decision-making. Because Urban is the king of this play. Where if, like, Urban is great at knowing exactly what the opposing fan base least wants his team to do, and then he's going to fucking do it. It's like, you know what, it would really fuck people up if I went for fourth down here. It's like, yeah, let's go for it. I want to make some people mad. And Fickell is kind of in that same mold. And I got to say, I am enjoying it. It's been fun.
I think that's just the main takeaway from this season. I think it's just been a really fun season. Started off with, like, a unexpected, like, upset. They had, like, a fun rain game. Then, like, a dramatic game against Ohio. And just, like, a couple of ass-kicking performances mixed in there. Like, it's been, like, really, really fun. It's, like, it's fun when you see it's good. Who knew?
Yeah, I haven't even, like, thought about basketball season. And basketball season is, like, 3 or 4 weeks away. And it's been a long time since that's been the case.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm kind of sad that it's mid-October. I really am. It's halfway there, man. It's halfway.
Yeah, even the fact that they're, like, on a bye, is, like, just disappointing. It's like, oh, they don't get to play this week.
Yeah, but we all got that. We got that Temple game to look forward to. And I'll actually get to watch it live. That never happens.
Yeah, the Saturday noon classic. is there anything else you guys want to get to about UC or about the league in general before we wrap this one up?
For me, I'm impressed with this league. Has proven itself to be head and shoulders above the rest of the G4. I'm going to call it the G4 because the Power 6 thing is actually real. Like, we've got three teams ranked in the top 25. No other, quote, G5 conference has that. Boise State went down again last week. They look to be out of the Access Bowl race. It really seems like, again, this year it's going to come down to an AAC team, which is exactly how everyone drew it up, right? Like, they created this conference to be that middle ground between the Power 5 and the rest and everybody else, and they're really proving it out. And it's been very impressive to see. I'm glad that's where this conference is at.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, that's the great thing about this league is it's very unpredictable, but you know the quality is going to be high. And it really comes down to the schools in this conference have made, with the exception of UConn, the schools in this conference have made great hires, almost across the board. And if you hire good people, good things happen.
Yeah, well, let's throw East Carolina in that mix of bad hires.
East Carolina, UConn notwithstanding, Tulsa in that same boat. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like, that is all I have conference-wise. I do have a larger college football point. We've always wondered what it would be like if Nick Saban had someone other than a game manager at quarterback. Turns out it's a Death Star. So, yay!
Yeah, Tua is a bit of a talented quarterback. Quite good.
His quarterback rating is 260.
Yes. Doesn't he have something like 20 touchdowns to like one pick or something this season?
Zero picks.
That's ridiculous.
He has. I don't know if it's still true, but he had more touchdowns than incompletions.
Season's over. It's just gotta suck if you're a team on Alabama's schedule and you're like, okay, well, we can potentially beat them on defense, but oh, wait a minute, they've got Tua who's gonna throw for 5 touchdowns on us, so we've got a problem.
Yeah, he's thrown 25 incomplete passes and 18 touchdowns. As a team, they've thrown 42 incomplete passes and thrown for 24 touchdowns. 72% completion percentage. to go along with like their like 600 running backs.
Because what you know what Alabama really did? What was really holding them back from winning national title after national title after national title was the quarterback play. And now it's not. So there's that.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy has 23 catches, just like as many as like Jugara, except he's got like 558 yards and 8 touchdowns. It's like unbelievable. 24 yards a catch. Just insane. Like their top receiver. Yeah, their games like are just so boring to watch though. For the other reason.
Well, that's the thing. They've always been boring to watch. Now they're boring for a completely different reason.
It's
like watching a snuff film.
But at least, like, you can just, like, turn on the Alabama game and, like, just, like, watch some of the first half and, like, okay. Okay. Like, the Ole Miss game. It's like, okay, I get it. There's, like, 48 points in the first quarter. And goodbye. This game is out of the rotation.
Yeah, that's... yeah. I honestly, for me, I thought that the offense was going to take a big step back after Lane Kiffin left, but man, they proved me wrong. They're so good.
Yeah, and now we're all sad about Alabama still being a Death Star. My bad, guys. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was interesting that now Alabama, of all places, has the best quarterback in football. It's weird.
It's just, like, to the point where, like, Nick Saban, in press conferences, he's just getting asked the most BS questions just to kind of fill time.
No, actually,
and he's going on rants about his second and third string defenses giving up 30 points to Arkansas. Yes, I like Nick Saban's press conferences now
because he is so pissed off about having the best quarterback in football. And you can tell it. He's so mad about this. Like, that man will find any reason to be mad. I'm kind of impressed by it. Like, I kind of admire his willingness to just be this curmudgeon.
He's such a nitpicker. And it's just, it's made him, like, an elite-level coach. It's so impressive. Like, coaches themselves generally sweat the details, but Nick Saban has just taken it to a completely different level this season.
According to the FPI, ESPN said, they only have the 5th best odds of winning out this season.
Well, they do have the toughest schedule of anybody on that list, right?
Ohio State, number 4. Notre Dame, number 3. Clemson, number 2. Appalachian State, the best chance to win out the rest of the season. Because their remaining strength of schedule is 125. Which, like, I guess makes them the team to watch if there's going to be some group of five zaniness. Because they're almost ranked.
Yeah, I mean, they're really good. And they should really enjoy this last year of Satterfield because he's not going to be around much longer.
And even though they lost that Penn State game, like that was like their game to get like on the radar, and so like, people like know they're good now. Like that'd be my only worry if like UC had like one or two losses, and like they lose like some weird game, and Appalachian State passes them in the rankings.
I mean, like at this point, I think it's far more likely for a one or two loss AAC champ to get that spot over Appalachian State going undefeated. Just because there's no respect for the Sun Belt.
Yeah, Appalachian State has such a garbage schedule. Like they're a good team. I mean, Scott Satterfield is a hell of a coach. He's gonna make like $4 or $5 million next year probably somewhere. Rutgers. But it's one of those situations
don't
where
set up the Rutgers. Why would you do that? We like Scott.
All right, Maryland. I'm just saying. There's going to be some very, very desperate team with a lot of money, and Rutgers immediately comes to mind when I think desperate team that has a lot of money, and they're going to throw a ton of money at Satterfield. And it's going to be a good hire. Whoever hires him is going to be very satisfied with their hire. But
yeah. I mean, that's, like, if I'm him, I wait for Jeremy Pruitt to explode in Knoxville, and then I go there.
Yeah. That or, like, a West Virginia-type school. Like, I feel like he's got to go to kind of one of those, like regional, like, something in his neighborhood.
But Dana's not going anywhere. He's just going to drink 7 Red Bulls a day and, you know, enjoy his gin and tonic at night at the casino and be there forever because he's Dana.
Yeah.
So I would find it interesting if, like, their schedule, like, is, like, notoriously one of the toughest to close the year. If, like, they, like, lose, like, their last, like, 3 games, if, like, there'd be pressure for them to, like, fire him.
I mean,
there's pressure in that state to fire him just because he's not one of theirs. You know, because he's this Plains kid who came to Morgantown and liked the casinos in the...
Yeah, I feel like if they were going to get rid of him, it would have been like a couple of years ago where they were kind of floating around the top 25, but, you know, always kind of fizzled out at the end of the season. Now it's like he's raised the bar and he's surpassing it. And they actually have a good team to back it up.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing about West Virginia this year, though, is they have a very good starting group, but if anybody gets hurt, they are fucked.
Oh, yeah.
There is no depth on that team.
Back half of their schedule, so tough. Do you know who plays the toughest end of the season schedule?
In the country?
Yes. It's a team you guys just mentioned a minute ago.
I don't know. Is it Tennessee?
It's Rutgers. Poor Rutgers.
Wait, they already played Ohio State. Who do they have left?
Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State.
Wisconsin. Northwestern.
Oh, and the kids, Wisconsin? Yeah, that's going to be fun.
That's a problem. That is a bit of a problem.
Yeah. Because they've already played the easy part of their schedule. That's the sad thing.
God, I hate you, Rutgers. Rutgers is the definition of failing upwards. God, fuck them.
Hey, remember when television market size mattered? That was fun.
Though, like, as the years have passed, it's just weird that UC and Rutgers were in the same conference.
Yeah, but UC's been in some weird conferences. You know, they were in the same conference with Florida State for basketball. Obviously not football. Well, you know, Florida State, South Carolina, those were conference mates for a while.
But that's back in the 80s when nobody knew what a conference was.
This is true. And I think we've reached the end of their podcast because we're at the rambling about bullshit stage.
Yeah, this is what happens when we have bye weeks. We have nothing to talk about.
No, I'm pretty sure even if we had a tight, concise outline, we would still do this at the last half hour of the podcast.
That's a good call. Glad you're back, Mike, Matt. Bring back the randomness.
I am what I am.
I think I'm going to stop this now. So thanks for listening. And as always, go Bearcats.